people are feared because our society normalizes police and they've never given an opportunity to think differently. Because anytime you contradict societal's norms is when you start getting pushback. And that's automatic with this defund school police work, with anything that is like against society. But they have to understand that we as students are the ones that are facing the backlash. We as the brown and black and marginalized students are the ones that are facing it in our day to day. And many people don't understand that because they're not on our campuses every day. They don't live in our shoes like we do.
Hello and welcome back to the Log in LA Virtual Reality Podcast.
The student-run show where we talk to some pretty amazing people.
Quarantined, of course. Today, I am one of your hosts, Abraham Flores.
And I'm your other host, Christine Latif.
On today's show, we have a pretty amazing person joining us. Her name is Kalila Williams. Kalila Williams is a student leader slash organizer with Students Deserve and Black Lives Matter Youth Vanguard. After the deaths of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, and countless others, Black Lives Matter sent out a nationwide call to hashtag defund the police. Shortly after, she joined Students Deserve, an LA-based organization, and their call to defund the school police and reinvest in Black futures. She has been recognized by the LA Times, LA List, People's Magazine, as well as featured in the PSA with Levi's. She continues organizing within her school community and her community as she is the founder of her school's Black Student Union and Students Deserve chapter. Her main goal by the time she graduates is that Black students are able to attend schools that are police-free and that they aren't criminalized or targeted.
And without any further ado, let's get into the show. So, Kalila, how has senior year been going so far? I know that all of us here on this podcast are seniors, so usually whenever we have another senior on the podcast, we like to start off with asking them about that.
Yeah, my senior year has been very active, very busy. It's been very different looking at senior year online this year, but for me, that's allowed more time for like my activism and stuff. So that, I guess that's like, you know, that's been a pro. It sucks that, you know, we are online. You can't really like see our friends and stuff, but we're making it work. And good thing is it's second semester. So I finished college applications. I finished that stressful part of senior year. Now it's just more about the decision waiting and then the relaxation after we finish like majority of our schoolwork. So
yeah, because it's like we're all waiting and it's just this awkward waiting period. But I mean, most of us should be knowing around March to April, so that's definitely coming up soon. Now, speaking of your activism, Kalila, let's talk about it. How did you first get into activism?
Well, soon after COVID started, I was contacted by one of my teachers who was like, hey, there's this organization called Students Deserve. I think it would be perfect for you. Right now, they're currently working on banning pepper spray on students. And I'm just like, I didn't even know that pepper spray was allowed to be used on students. So that was something new for me. And then I slowly got into the work. And then when I got involved, it shifted. It went from talking about a ban on pepper spray, which was one of our COVID-19 demands, to the defund the school police work. So everything moved pretty fast when I first got involved. But if it wasn't for my teacher, I wouldn't be involved.
And so you mentioned defunding the police. Why do we need to do that? I know there's a lot of pushback on it. As a student, I totally agree. But there's some people who might not understand. So why do we need to defund the police?
Right. Like you said, as a student, you understand. A lot of people who have the pushback and are like, we don't need to defund the school police. That's our safety. Like, what are we going to do if something bad happens? It's because they haven't been on a school campus. They don't know what goes on day to day when we're there with the school police. And as And as a Black student, I faced the experiences with school police where I was victimized and racially profiled by my school police officer. I know that when I was in my sophomore year, the school police officer accused me of having a drug overdose after I passed out. Like, if anybody at my school knows me, they know I'm always very actively involved in my school. I'm always doing something. And it's quite normal that I don't end up, like, eating or drinking. And I really just, like, push myself to the limit. So with that, like, you know, I didn't know what was going on when I regained consciousness. But then the first thing that I was asked was, do you have a history of drug abuse? Could you be having a drug overdose? Without any, I didn't, you know, give him a reason to think that. So for me, I really strive to do this work because of my experiences, but also it's also the many other experiences that I've heard being in this work, because we as LAUSD, Black students in LAUSD, we only represent 9% of the population. Yet we're 25% of the school police arrest diversions and citations. And it's really hard to look at that statistical data and just say, there's nothing wrong, that the police are really keeping our students safe. People are oftentimes in fear that if we take police off of our campus, that means that we're going to have a school shooting. But if you look at the data, the communities that you're over-policing aren't the ones where we have school shootings. It's the white, wealthier communities. And why is that? That's a whole nother question that needs to be answered. People are feared because our society normalizes police and they've never given an opportunity to think differently. Because anytime you contradict societal norms is when you start getting pushback. And that's automatic with this defund school police work, with anything that is like against society. But they have to understand that we as students are the ones that are facing the backlash. We as the brown and Black and marginalized students are the ones that are facing it in our day-to-day. And many people don't understand that because they're not on our campuses every day. They don't live in our shoes like we do.
Yeah, that's a great answer. It was so scary one time. I was walking through my, I was literally going to go talk to the principal about like some random thing. And there was this dude, one of my like fellow students was just in a room alone with a police officer. Like, and that was so weird to me. That was so strange to me. Like how that was just okay to be happening on school campus where you're there to learn. So personally, I do understand, but then what are the alternatives? You know, it's said that these school police are there to protect us, but what are the alternatives then?
The alternatives is using restorative justice strategies. It's really implementing into services instead of funding the criminalization of students. If we use the money, the same amount of money, which is $70 million, $77 million to be exact, on services for our students, we would see a change, because oftentimes students act out because they don't have anything, they don't have the resources. We aren't taught those resources and we aren't given those resources. In low income and minority communities, oftentimes we don't even have updated textbooks. We don't have technological resources compared to white or wealthier communities. And then they wonder why students act out. It has nothing to do with the fact that we want to live a life that is like bad or influences us into like prison, but we get criminalized anyway. There's literally a pipeline from school to prison. We fail to acknowledge that within our society. Like I said, it's about funding our services. If students were given a full-time counselor, because oftentimes students don't even have a counselor on their school campus, but they have a school police officer. If they had that counselor who they can come and talk to, who can lead them into the direction, help them plan out their future, maybe we would see change. If they had a full-time nurse instead of a nurse where if you get hurt maybe on a Tuesday and the nurse isn't there until Wednesday, they wouldn't have to worry about things like that. If we were taught within ethnic studies in our classes, where we can we could learn about our culture, about our heritage, about where we come from, about our history, then maybe we would see change. If we could say that we're funding psychiatric social workers that are helping to prevent our students from getting involved in these lives of crime or whatever it may be, then we would see change. But we don't have that. No one is funding services for us as students. Instead, they're saying, let's fund these police officers to criminalize you while you're supposed to be getting an education. And then let's talk about why you aren't actually learning, why you are often in fear when you walk on your campus, why you can't sit down in a classroom and really focus on your work because there's too many other boundaries and factors involved. We're not funding services for our students, and that is the first step. Our first step is to divest from criminalization and invest into those services. Invest into those services like counselors and psychiatric social workers and ethnic studies and nurses, so many other things, school climate coaches. There are so many things that we can name that our students need that they aren't getting.
What was kind of the boiling over point that made you say, okay, like, it's time to actually do something about it and not just realize that it's there?
Yeah. Well, for me, how I started things, it was two different things. So I've always been an activist in my school community. When I first joined my school and we didn't have a Black student union, that was something that I started. I'm one of the co-founders of the Black Student Union at my school, because I wanted students to have that safe place to come to. We needed that affiliate space. And then, like, of course, we knew that police brutality and school police, and we can name, like, all the systematic racism ways, but for me, I've never had the time. I've always kept myself so busy because of, like, my, like, the life that I grew up in wasn't the best life, and it's what shaped me to do what I do. But originally, I was like, okay, I'm gonna keep myself busy with a whole bunch of things in school. And then when I was looking, like, I knew this stuff existed, and, you know, I would sign my petitions and I would talk to my friends about it, but I wasn't out in the streets. And I think it took for me really to find that engaging opportunity for someone to bring it forth to me. When my teacher said, hey, I think you would be perfect for this, here's some information about this, show up to a general meeting, see if you would like it. It was me realizing that that support system was there, that I took it on. And that's when I started to really get involved within this work.
Could you talk a little bit about a few of the success stories of Students Deserve? I know that there was a very recent big success. I'd love to hear about it.
Yeah. We in Students Deserve have our stepping stones, which lead us to further movements, further actions. And so back in 2019, was when we ended random searches in school, which I don't know if many people remember, but that was a racist policy that we had that targeted Black and brown students to be searched, which further criminalized them. So we ended that back in 2019, but that was our stepping stone to say we need to remove school police from campuses. So this summer, when Black Lives Matter made that nationwide call to defund the police, we at Students Deserve said, well, let's defund our school police. Let's get the services for our Black and brown students. So what we did was we rallied, we organized, we hit head hard and head fast for our students. And in June, the school board voted to defund the school police by $25 million. And so, you know, that money was taken out of the police budget, but there was nothing set in stone about where it was going to go. Months had passed and nobody was having discussions about where it would go. And so in December, the superintendent made a proposal, which was a really biased, problematic fast proposal. He made it within a weekend and was like, this is where we're going to put the $25 million. And we were like, no, we cannot vote on this because this does not fund our Black students. So we worked over winter break to make a alternate proposal in which we worked with the superintendent back in January to get this passed, put on the school board vote. And in last week, we actually found out the school board voted to ban use of pepper spray on students. They funded the $25 million into Black students plus an additional $11 million. So that's $36 million altogether for Black student achievement, which is more than just making sure that you have a good GPA or test scores. It's about implementing those services that we've been calling for. And we also got the passage of 10 additional schools to use the community schools motto, which will help our students who, you know, go to low income schools within their community and aren't given those resources. So that was a major victory, as well as the biggest one, which is no school police officers will be on campus anymore, which is something that for a lot of us just lifted weight off of our shoulders, which is something just has made us feel like we can breathe again.
Well, it sounds like you've done some amazing work. I know you're such an amazing person just from hearing everything about you, seeing you at the ACLU Youth Power Summit last Saturday. But as we get into this, I'm going to let Christine talk a little bit about where does someone as amazing as you go to college?
So, Kalila, do you have any plans of continuing your activism and college? And if so, what do you plan on doing?
Yes, definitely. I plan on continuing my activism at school when I go to college. Hopefully that'll be at UCLA, so fingers crossed. And within UCLA, there's this current campaign. Well, it's within all UCs. So either way, I'll still be participating. But it's to remove cops off of campus at UC. So that's definitely something that I'm looking to get interested in when I go to college. And also, you know, I'll be studying sociology to learn more about that socialist perspective when we come to everything that goes on within our country. So I'm definitely very excited for that. As far as occupation-wise, I don't really know yet where I'm going to go. Like, I don't have, like, oh, I want to become the president of the United States. Like, that's not me. Like, I just kind of want to see where life takes me. Like, throughout high school, I always had that set in stone. I'm going to be a doctor. And that when I really got that hands-on work, I realized that wasn't something that I wanted to do. That's not what I want to do. I definitely want to go into activism. I definitely want to become a social justice advocate. I'm not sure what that looks like just yet, but I'll see where life takes me as far as that.
Are there any like people that you look at for inspiration?
Definitely. I mean, some of my closest basically family, people who I call family within this movement, have been my idols for years. Dr. Malina Abdullah, Patrice Cullors. Yeah, those are probably two of my biggest inspirations as far as, like, you know, you can be, like, you can make a life of being a social justice advocate, which is something that most people don't talk about. You know, when they say, like, what's the jobs that you can do? It's, you can be a doctor, you can be a lawyer, you can be, like, an engineer. Like, they give you all these, like, strategies of what you can do. But for me, I'm that hands-on person. And it took for me, like, really getting involved to realize what I wanted to do. So those have been two of my biggest idols, and I definitely, like, want to continue to work within this struggle. So, yeah, those are the two people that I mainly look up to.
Now, Kalila, speaking of activism, let's go a bit deeper into that. Do you think that activism is a work that ever ends?
It depends on who you are. You know, there's some people who are only committed for a certain part of the struggle. And then there's some people who are committed to this work forever. So, like, let's say, like, you were a part of the defund school police movement. And, you know, we reached our goal of getting cops off campus. And let's say you were done with that. And you're like, okay, there's nothing else for me to do. I'm done. Activism is done for me. But there's then there's people who... are like, nope, there's our next steps. We need to fully defund the school police and get the rest of the $50 million budget into our Black students. So for me, activism never ends. I'm definitely that person who's like, hey, you know, there's always next step after we win our victories. But there are some people who are only committed to the struggle for a short time being. So it just really depends on who you are.
Switching lanes a little bit. Do you think that if quarantine hadn't happened, you kind of touched on this, but do you think you would have gotten as invested in activism without quarantine?
I can't really say. I mean, it depends on what, like, the opportunities that were really brought forth. Because I do feel that I still would have, because without quarantine, there still would have been a George Floyd. There still would have been a Breonna Taylor. There still would have been an Ahmaud Arbery. So many other names that we can name from last summer. Those names still would have been a list to the millions of Black lives that were stolen because of state violence and police brutality. And so that nationwide call still would have went out. And I feel like I still would have got that opportunity to join Students Deserve. Yes, because of quarantine, I was able to get out a little bit more, but I still would have been involved in the movement no matter what, probably still as much as I am. It just really took, you know, it just really took that call. It really took everything that happened. It really took that those resources that were given to me and the opportunity to join Students Deserve.
Okay, well, speaking of quarantine, we have some recent news that the Johnson & Johnson, like, one-shot vaccine came out. But I know that you're interested in talking about vaccines. So what are your thoughts on the vaccines?
Well, I don't know. When it comes to, like, vaccines, I still don't know where I stand yet. You know, all my teachers are like, oh, I'm getting the vaccine. But most of my teachers are white. So I like, there's no one in my family who's gotten the vaccine. So there's no one that I can call and ask, like, hey, how are you feeling after you got the vaccine? So I'm still very skeptical on it. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine is something that I personally will never take ever. I don't care, because I know how the company Johnson & Johnson has been within these recent years. And, you know, I've seen the cases of people who were using the talcum powder and end up, like, getting traces of cancer. And so, yeah, that one I'm to still know. As far as, like, Pfizer and Moderna, I'm not sure about. You know, yeah, a lot of, like, my family is still skeptical about the vaccines. And it's really kind of hard to trust this vaccine that was made so fast. And, like, this virus is still so new to us. So I know that a lot of people are getting the vaccine and they're okay. And then there's some people who are dying and getting sick even more. So I don't, I like, you know, I'm not saying don't take the vaccine, take the vaccine. You know, that's completely your own personal opinion. But I need more research. I need more data collection, because I haven't seen enough positive studies yet for, like, me personally to be able to say, you know, I'll take the vaccine, or, hey, mom, like, you know, the vaccine's safe. Because, you know, I'm still hearing way too many, like, different controversial arguments about this vaccine. So,
mm-hmm. So you mentioned your teachers that are taking it are white, and that your family, who is black, is not taking it. As a Latino, I know a lot of my family members do not want to take it either because they're also skeptical of it. Why do you think there is kind of a racial kind of divide when it comes to medicine, or in this case specifically, vaccines?
Well, I mean, it's just look at our history. I mean, for blacks, it's the Tuskegee experiment. Like, we often look to that when we talk about like vaccines, and then it's like this vaccine is so new to a virus that is so new. It was made so fast, yet we have diseases that affect the black and brown communities at a greater amount that nobody has found a vaccine for. And now all of a sudden, to one of the deadliest viruses on earth, that we have this vaccine already, and it's supposed to, you know, produce immunity. So, I mean, it's normal to be skeptical because, for one, this country wasn't built for us. This country was never like equalized for us. So then for them to say, you know, here's this vaccine, it's going to help everyone, it just seems too good to be true. And, you know, we aren't there. Like, we're not sitting there in the lab watching these scientists make this test. So we don't, like, I mean, this vaccine, so we don't know what's in it. And so, you know, we have every reason to be skeptical about it, especially when the trials were first starting. I remember my aunt and my mom, like, both getting the email at the same time from this research facility. And it was like a research facility associated with Pfizer. And they were saying, like, hey, like, you know, the COVID-19 pandemic is greatly affecting your community. Be the change of that by joining our study to find the vaccine that will, you know, cure immunity. And I'm just like, why are they singling out like you guys? Like, what? And then, you know, like black females in like their mid ages. I'm like, okay, yeah. So, like, there's just so many reasons when we look at our history that given us reasons to be skeptical about this vaccine, and to think otherwise just means that you normalize anti-minority, anti-like marginalized individuals.
So good to be skeptical, but also good to do our own research. I think that's kind of applies to a lot of things.
So Kalila, as we know, you've had a lot of amazing opportunities and have been featured on different magazines and websites, and even in commercials as well. So do you want to maybe tell us about your experience with working with these companies such as the LA Times and Levi's?
Yeah. So the LA Times article was something that I had the opportunity through Students Deserve to participate in. It was just them doing an article on how students feel about not being able to return back to school once Austin Buettner, our superintendent, announced that we will not be returning back to campus last fall. So it was really just me talking about how, you know, I wasn't surprised, because I was one of those people when everybody was like, oh, see you in 2 weeks, you know, this whole pandemic is gonna go away. I was like, okay, y'all are tripping. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll see you probably not until next year. I knew that, like, there was no way that the coronavirus was going away in 2 weeks. Did I expect that we wouldn't be returning the fall semester? No. But when I was living through that summer and I saw how the cases were still rising and everything was still on lockdown, I was like, we're not going back to school. Did I think at least we'd be back by now? Yes. But we aren't. So that was kind of like, I was just kind of giving my viewpoints on how I felt about not returning back to school. And then I was reached out to, by Levi's because I was attending a Jackie Lacey protest, and the filmmaker who was one of, like, you know, the filmmaker that was doing the shoot for Levi's was there. And she came to me and was like, oh, you know, we have, like, this, we're doing this, like, voting campaign, like, PSA, and, you know, there's not really many students in it, and I would love for you to be in it. Like, I see, how, like, strong you are within this movement and how you're, like, encouraging people. You're out here telling people to vote. So that I got involved with that because the filmmaker approached me. And it was really cool working with Levi's. Everyone there was, like, so nice. And, you know, like, I just really overall love that experience. That was, like, my first, like, major anything. So I was, like, it was very, like, you know, even though it looks a lot different because of the pandemic, it was still an amazing opportunity. I remember, like, walking to the studio, and I was still so, like, nervous. I was, but I was, like, really happy. And then, you know, the simple things like makeup, hair, like all of that still count. And then when we went to the actual like studio where we recorded, and I just remember walking in and like there's like all this equipment and like so many people, but everybody was so like nice and everybody was like so understanding. Yeah, like overall that was an amazing experience. And then because of the LA Times article, People's Magazine actually reached out to me. And initially it was about a shoot, like about same thing related to LA Times, like how do you feel about not being back at school? From like this Gen Z perspective. And then I guess after like the writers talked or whatever, they, you know, had this other column that they were doing, which was the Girls Changing the World 2020 edition. So then the editor contacted me and was like, hey, we think you would actually be perfect for this column. So can we talk to you a little bit more about this? See where this can go. That was like really cool. Everyone also there was like really nice. That one was more like I didn't have to go anywhere though. Like it was just a matter of me sending like pictures from, like my work, to them so that they can use, and then just a matter of talking and doing that article. And then, I did have to film the video because it was a video and an article. So I had to film the video at home. But overall, everything was really, like, really simple, really fun. And I met, like, a lot of, great people that are, you know, changing the world in many different ways. So that was really, really cool because I found, like, you know, I've been connecting with these girls for a while now that, you know, we met each other through People's Magazine. So that was really great as well. But yeah, overall, those experiences were really amazing, really fun, and very impactful. Not only like for me, but for a lot of people, because, you know, during the time that we released like the Levi's PSA was during the time where everybody was like skeptical about the vote because, you know, we had Joe Biden saying one thing, Donald Trump saying another. It wasn't, you just didn't know who to really trust. So that was like, I think that was like kind of the perfect moment to do that. Cause you know, we have to realize like, even though we have all this stuff going on, like look at the face of the world right now. This is where we need to vote, why we need to vote. So
Hey there, this is Editing Abraham, just letting you know that unfortunately at this point in our conversation, our audio file got corrupted. Oh no, but it's all okay actually, because the last question that we asked Kalila was, what advice would you give your past self when you were starting out all of this social justice and advocacy work? She said, quite wisely I might add, just do it. Just do it. She said, there's too many things going on in this world, too many problems in this world for you to wish that you were doing something and never actually doing it. So, just to it. A big, big thank you to Kalila Williams for giving her time to us so that we can talk to her. It was an amazing conversation. I'm so inspired. We hope you all have a great rest of your time throughout this virtual reality. Thank you for listening.